Freedom970.com.
The Five Pillars of Freedom on Freedom 970 KUFO AM Portland.
Investing Simplified is brought to you by Chuck Price, President and Wealth Manager of Price Financial Group, Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm. Individual situations will vary, and the information on this show should only be relied upon when coordinated with individual advice. Other parties present on this broadcast are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management. Chuck can be contacted by visiting www.pfgwm.com. You can email Chuck a question at askchuck@pfgwm.com, or you can call him right now at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now, here's the host of Investing Simplified, Chuck Price.
We do Investing Simplified.
Today, hosting Investing Simplified is Carl Jepson, attorney and partner with the Warren Allen Law Firm. You can call Carl now at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now, here's the host of Investing Simplified, attorney Carl Jepson.
Welcome to Investing Simplified. This is Carl Jepson, and I'm filling in for Chuck Price today. And in the studio with me is Kevin Stege. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning. How are you today?
I am well, good. Thank you. And this is a lovely day here in downtown Portland, Oregon. We are a local show. We are a call-in show, if you so desire. The number again is 503-417-7626. We would welcome your call on any subject you'd like to talk about. Usually we talk about estate planning and taxes and investing. Today it'd be kind of a little bit more on the investing, or excuse me, on the taxes and the estate planning part of it. But if you just want to make a comment or share your thoughts or ask us about a topic that you'd like to hear us talk about later sometime, we'd be glad to hear that too. And in fact, if you want to call and tell us how we can improve the show for you, we'd like to hear that as well. So anyway, before I start, I'd like to offer my thanks to all of the veterans out there. This is Veterans Day, and thank you all for your service. We all owe a debt of gratitude to you, and thank you very much. So without further ado, we're going to talk about a number of things today. And one of the things I like to do is to just sort of look back at my practice over the last week or so and find something of interest. But this time I've heard some newscasts and other things about abuse of elders and seniors. And it's not a happy topic, but it's one that I think is good to highlight from time to time. And I happened to run across a comprehensive report from the state of Oregon on the Department of Human Resources about complaints and things of elder abuse and abuse against people with disabilities. And it was a little bit surprising, I think, in a way. And I just thought I'd share some of the sort of statistics that came out of this. This was done in 2012, so they're actually quite recent. So there, in 2012, there were 34,000 calls about abuse to the agency. Of those, that was 6,000 more than the preceding year. So that's somewhat of an increase. Of those, 15,000 were assigned to be investigated, and out of those, there were 12,538 which were physical were had to do with older adults and people with physical disabilities. There were 1,496 adults with developmental disabilities, 604 adults with mental illness, and 226 children. Of those that were investigated, 34% were financial abuse, 27% neglect, 18% verbal abuse, 2% sexual abuse, and 5% abandonment and restraint. So those are kind of, scary kinds of things. And I think if I had anything to suggest in terms of that, if you have a loved one who is in a facility or at home, it's important to keep track of them. You really, the best protection you can offer your loved one is to be in constant contact and observation of them so that they do not, you know, get out of hand. You really don't want to just let things go and not talk to them and not go see them, because it is really important for someone to be there and be able to advocate for them. I do have, for those of you who have some, I have some telephone numbers, if you have a pencil handy, for places that you might call if you have concerns about neglect or caregiving or housing and transportation or medical assistance, all of those kinds of things. First of all, there's an organization that I used to be on the board, Elders in Action, and they have trained volunteers that assist people in the areas of linking people with local services, with community resources and the like, regarding housing and health care and crime and elder abuse. And their telephone number is 503-235-5474. That's Elders in Action, 503-235-5474. Elders in Action has been around a long time. They really have solved a lot of problems for people. They'll do things like not only help with scams or something like that. Sometimes they'll help recover money. They'll actually help direct people if there's an issue of abuse to the right agencies to deal with it, and all sorts of things. And then like in various kinds of things, even like trying to find housing or trying to find medical care, sometimes they'll even help people fill out forms. They really, really provide a great service, and they're volunteers, and that's free to the people who
I was going to say it's donor supported.
It's donor supported, and if you're looking for an opportunity to really make a difference and be part of the community and helping your elders, then this is a good way to do it, because you can get into the community and really do something good for somebody who really needs some help. So that's one agency. Then there's the There's an agency called the Aging and Disability Resource Connection, and it's essentially a resource directory. And it's 1-855-673-2372. That's 1-855-673-2372. And then finally, I'll give you a local number for Multnomah County, Washington County, and Clackamas County Department of Human Services. And Multnomah County is 503-988-5480, and Washington County is 503-640-3489, and then Clackamas County is 503-655-8640. And like I said, it's really important. If you think that there are issues that you need to deal with, there are people out there who can render assistance, and I would strongly recommend that you call those numbers. And certainly, if you need those numbers and you can't remember them, you can call us here, or you can call me at my office at 503-255-8795. So that's kind of my initial introduction to financial and elder abuse, and something that I think that is extremely unfortunate to see. In my practice, I've seen it on occasion. Generally in the sense of financial elder abuse, there are some steps that you can take. But like I said, I think the number one step is, if you have a loved one who is vulnerable in that way, to keep track of them, you know, in the sense of, you know, watching after them and making sure that you have regular contact with them, even if they're difficult. Because I know that sometimes the older folks are hard to be around, including myself. So, but nonetheless, they sometimes do need your assistance, just to be monitoring what's going on. And don't think that just because they're in a really nice, pretty facility with nice meals and pretty music that everything is well, because it isn't necessarily. So that's kind of a little bit about that. So your thoughts, Kevin?
Well, you talked about this fairly in depth last week, or at least a part of this, and I know you've had a fair amount of experience in your practice, you know, dealing with estates, setting up wills and trusts, and you know, dealing with elderly law, and I think it's just a good thing for people to definitely be aware of. And I know you've got some insight in that. Is this going to be a continuing series of the next couple of weeks?
Well, not necessarily. Mm-hmm. It's just sort of been on my mind.
Yeah.
And no, indeed, I have sort of a hodgepodge of things to talk about today. In addition to that, I want to talk about First of all, I want to talk about sort of what I would call the essential documents in estate planning. And then I want to talk about, in Carl's comment section, I'm going to talk about important questions to discuss with your estate planning lawyer. And these are things that I've found are questions that sometimes people who are going to do their will, if you want to call it that, just sort of don't think about. And so I just want to present those to people. And I want to encourage people. This is to do some year-end planning. And I know some of the things you're going to be talking about are year-end planning sorts of things.
That's right.
And that is because, you know, we all, or at least most of us, make New Year's resolutions. And sometimes that's go to your estate planning lawyer or go to your accountant and get things, get your affairs in order, if you will. Well, my recommendation is since you probably didn't finish it last year, let's get it done before the end of the year, and then you can have a different thing on your list next year. And one of the things I recently encourage is to do it fairly soon, because during the holiday season, it becomes more and more difficult, and there tends to be somewhat of a rush on CPA services and on lawyer services. And so to get it done, you've got to make that call to your attorney or to someone that you trust, to your CPA, and get in and get your information together and get it done. You will feel so much better having your affairs in order starting the new year rather than starting your new year without them having them in order and having to do that. You might want to look at some more important goals for you in the new year other than the ones you haven't gotten done in the last year.
Well, I got to tell you, Carl, I've been looking forward to this show knowing that Chuck wasn't going to be here to censor all of the good things we were going to get a say and we have on our list. So this we know he's down California at a seminar getting some information and stuff to bring back for next week. And I understand we'll be having Harry Dent on 2 weeks from now on November 23rd, I believe.
I think you're
it
right.
Was. And so we'll always look forward to that show and hear what Harry has to say and what's on his mind. But definitely give us a call, 503-417-7626. We really do want your calls and want to hear what's on your mind, even if you have just a comment. And if you have a question, hold the investing questions for later, another show. But attorney and tax questions, we would love to hear from you.
You bet. And you know, we're going to talk about some other things too. If you keep us in silence, then we have to make up the dead air. So if there's something that's of particular interest or a topic that's of interest to you, please let us know, because we don't always know exactly what's of most interest or what's on your mind. So this is a good opportunity. You know, sit back with that cup of coffee, you know, get a pencil, and you can find out what's going on, and we'll try to answer your questions as best we can. If we don't know the answer, we'll try to find out. Now, I have to caveat that this is not, you know, specific legal advice or specific tax advice. It's always general and informational in character. But it might give you some direction and give you the appropriate guidance to go talk to your own professional and or whether or not you feel like you have to. So. One of the things I think you were going to talk about was some of the tax planning that we're going to do for the end of the year, as I recall.
That's right. We've got a couple interesting things to talk about. One is we're going to look at 8 expiring tax breaks that are going to be going away at the end of 2013. And then we're just going to look at general tax planning ideas that you can do any year that's good to just kind of sit back and see, hey, do I meet any of these criteria for, you know, looking at certain things. I don't want to steal my thunder here, but just good standard things that you can do to help minimize this year's taxes and hopefully either defer or not have to recognize income into future years or accelerate expenses. Or maybe you want to accelerate income into this year. And we'll talk about various scenarios, how that can be the case, and hopefully lower your tax bill.
Yeah, one of the interesting things when I was in law school, which was in the days of quill pens and the things like that, our tax professor always told us that there is almost always a tax consequence in every transaction that you do. And I think really that's true. It seems like it wouldn't be that prevalent, but actually it's pretty hard to do anything that involves money or property that doesn't have some kind of a tax consequence. So it's very important to keep on top of those things with your tax professional, because the law is complex and it changes, and it can be very, very challenging, and sometimes it can have some unanticipated consequences. So they're, you know, figuring in what those tax consequences might be before you buy that new property, or you sell the old property, or you do certain things, you take property out of a corporation or something like that. Those can be some serious issues for you.
Absolutely. And, you know, in looking at an individual's tax perspective, the tax bill each year, other than probably your mortgage or maybe serious medical costs, your tax bill's going to be one of your largest annual expenses and probably one of your largest lifetime expenses over the course of your lifetime. So managing that particular expense, if you want to look at it as an expense or a claim on your cash flow, if you will, then it's important to be knowledgeable about it, and at certain times probably hiring somebody to take care of the complicated transactions.
Well, I certainly have found that that doing my own taxes was not a good idea. And so I leave it up to the firm that deals with our firm, and just because I don't want to do it myself, and the last time I did it myself, it wasn't as nice as it might have been. Well, we're going to also talk about things. So we've got a couple of things to come up. The questions that are important to ask yourself before you go to your estate planning lawyer. I'm going to talk about the essentials of what I call essential estate planning documents, and then we're going to talk about tax matters, and then if worse comes to worse, I have an example of a letter which I've read before about your parent, that parent who's maybe not as sharp as he once was, but you know, he's kind of writing a letter to his children about how he wants to be treated as far as his future. So, well, we'll get to that a little later on, and a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but nonetheless, I think appropriate for a lot of people, because that's an issue that is very, very important to people, is how do you deal with mom or dad when they're, you know, slipping a little bit? And it's important to pay attention to them. They were nice to you. You should be nice to them. So anyway, we're going to take a little quick break, and then we'll come back with Carl's comments. This is Investing Simplified, and the phone number is 503-417-7626. We'll be back in a moment.
Management. Price Financial Group, Wealth Management.
When your legal rights and responsibilities are involved, you need attorneys you can trust. The attorneys at the Warren Allen Law Firm offer you solid legal advice and exceptional service. We practice in nearly all areas of law. We can help you with your legal needs, including wills, trusts, probate, contracts, real estate, construction, landlord rights, business, personal injury, divorce, bankruptcy, and civil litigation. The Warren Allen Law Firm has represented individuals and businesses for over three decades, and its nine attorneys have more than 200 years of combined experience practicing law. By combining experience and knowledge with individualized attention and prompt service, Warren Allen is the law firm to rely on when you are in need of legal representation. We are conveniently located at 850 Northeast 122nd Avenue near the I-205 and I-84 interchange. I'm Carl Jepson, partner with the Warren Allen Law Firm, and I invite you to contact us at 503-255-8795 or on the web at warrenallen.com.
Do you have a tax question? Here's your opportunity to ask the tax investigator, Kevin Stege, CPA and partner of the Baker Colson CPA firm. You can call Kevin at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now here's the CPA with the tax answers, CPA Kevin Stege.
Well, welcome back to Investing Simplified, and we're going to rearrange our schedule just a little bit, and Kevin Stege, the tax investigator, is in the house, and he's going to enlighten us as to the vagaries of the tax code.
Okay. So, so first off, let's talk a little bit about the IRS has recently released a and this was a very current release. I believe it was on October 31st of this year. A new scam that has been perpetrated upon us law-abiding taxpayers, and basically, what this scam is it's a telephone-based scam, and there it's a pretty aggressive setup where victims are called, and it sounds like an official IRS employee. You've got call noise in the background, like it's a big call center. If on your caller ID, it's going to come up as an IRS number. They've managed to trick the caller ID system to bring a legitimate IRS number or something that looks like one up. And basically, it's a very aggressive approach, and a lot of it is to new immigrants and maybe people who aren't real savvy yet about the tax system and how things work here. And a very aggressive approach about you need to pay us money now or we're going to be taking your bank account. We're going to be taking your driver's license away. I mean, clearly things that to somebody who's been involved with the IRS knows that this is not something that they do. And so it's been a pretty aggressive approach. Every state has been hit by it. And it's mainly... Well, first off, some of the characteristics of what this scam is the scam uses fake names and actually Irish badge numbers. They can recite the last four digits of your Social Security number, so they've been able to get a hold of that. They will send you bogus emails once they get your email to follow up on this. And probably the most disconcerting is they actually... they say that local police or the DMV will contact you to take your assets. And then in a day or so, they will have another scammer as the local police or a DMV employee call you and aggressively want you to wire them money or give them money on a prepaid debit card. Now, if you know anything about the IRS, they never ask you to wire them money and they never ask for a prepaid debit card.
You know, the interesting thing there is that those sound like terribly, you know, draconian, although to some people might sound like, you know, oh my gosh, this is a very real thing. These people sound serious. I got to do something. Well, the problem is here that in order to actually do those kinds of things, for example, garnish bank accounts and levy against your property, you will know about that way in advance if the IRS is ever going to do that, because they will have sent you numerous letters and chances to mitigate it and chances to work out a deal. And if you it just doesn't happen out of the blue. And also, they end up having to file various kinds of papers. So if this is just coming to you the first time you've ever heard anything about it is on the phone, it's wrong. It's a scam. They just don't do it that way. The only thing you might get would be somebody calling you to set up a time to come in for an audit. But I think they send you a letter for that too. So I don't think that the likelihood that the IRS is going to call you for any reason unless you're actively engaged in an audit or something already, it's just not going to happen. Mm-hmm. So if they call and they say they're from the IRS, they're not. And just say, you know, goodbye.
That's exactly right. If you don't have a letter that has come that makes sense to you that you would owe, I mean, immigrants and people that are, you know, freshly into the country and stuff, unless you've been making money, you're probably not going to have much of a tax liability anyway. So definitely just be aware of your tax situation. The IRS will not contact you by email directly the first time unless you have already opened a dialogue with them and given them the email address for ease of transfer of information regarding an audit directly with an auditor. So that's pretty straightforward. So hopefully this can be laid to rest and people can realize what's out there. Well, another scam that's out there that I think we're all aware of is this is thieves impersonating the IRS, the other scam that's out there is thieves impersonating the taxpayer and basically stealing your identity. And the IRS released new numbers regarding fraudulent refunds that have been issued over the last year. They've done a good job of reducing the amount, but unfortunately, we're still talking in the billions of incorrect refunds being refunded to taxpayers. And typically how it happens is somehow the identity thief has stolen name and social security number, and they file the tax return before the legitimate taxpayer files their tax return. And so right when the e-file season opens, these people that have culled names and social security numbers or bought them or stolen them or however they've gotten them, they'll jump online, file a tax return even before the IRS has copies of W-2s. You know, when your employer gives you a W-2, they also send a copy to the IRS. Well, they don't have to get the IRS copy to them until typically the end of February. And e-filing season opens, well, it's going to be 1st of February this year, the first part of February, I should say. And so these people jump on, file a tax return. If it's not like asking for, you know, $1 million of a refund, typically it's going to just flow through the IRS system. And in, and the IRS prides itself on getting refunds out quickly to taxpayers. They'll fire a refund out, and the thief will cash the check. And then the legitimate taxpayer, say a month or two later, goes to file their tax return, and it gets bounced back. You get that e-file reject because something's not right, and it comes back and says your return has already been filed under this number. So in that case, you have to convert to paper, mail it in, probably want to contact the IRS, let them know you're a victim of identity theft. And they do a pretty good job of resolving that in your favor, but it's still a lot of money out the door. And in some cases, it can take up to 300 days or more to for them to resolve. But typically, they've been able to resolve them within 120 days or so. But that's quite a delay for on your refund.
Yeah, it's you know, kind of if you're looking for your refund to for a special purpose, it's kind of a frustrating thing, I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's amazing what, you know, what I guess I would say talented individuals, knowledgeable individuals use their talents to steal money. You know, you would think that people that are that clever would be capable of doing something for good, but maybe that just doesn't figure into their thinking.
Yeah.
So anyway, what else we got on the tax investigators radar today?
Well, let's take a look at 8 tax breaks that are expiring at the end of this year. You may or may not fall into the category where these affect you, but if they do, consider you know, potentially taking advantage of them this year. Because once January 1st comes around, you're not gonna have these available. So the first is, if you were a teacher, you may have always taken that $250 educator expense deduction because you bought supplies and crayons and pads and stuff for your students. Well, this is the last year you can do that. So $250 deduction is now gone. Number two, and I think this one's pretty significant. Especially if you were going into foreclosure on your principal residence, but the exclusion of income for the cancellation of indebtedness on your principal residence, 2013 is the last year where they just said, if your excluded debt, if you have income when they write off your mortgage because you owe more than the house is worth. If it was your principal residence, they said, okay, because everyone was hit by this, we're going to let you properly report it and not have to pay any tax on the difference between the debt and the fair market value. But if you're thinking of going down that road, you better finish it off by the end of 2013. Some of these, there's a chance that they could extend it. I wouldn't put my money on it.
So that is a huge thing, because during the time that all of those foreclosures were happening, and they're still going on, by the way, it's not like they're done. And some of you may be unfortunately involved in that. But the bad thing is that, you know, the generally, you, if it was your personal residence, you got a free pass. In other words, they felt like if you got, you know, if you were in underwater and you had to, you know, turn it loose, that it wouldn't be really fair to kick you while you're down and have you have to pay income on the amount, the, you know, of the difference, the debt forgiveness that you got. Unfortunately, could be a lot of money, and it's money that you don't have because you're not you're getting charged with income that you really in your pocket never got. So that's something you really want to think about before negotiating a deal to just, you know, give the house back to the bank, which some will do. Although it's kind of like trying to, you know, build a Grand Coulee Dam or something to get through it, but occasionally they'll actually let you do that. The problem with that, of course, is now, I guess, when it comes into 2014, gosh, that could be a huge hit. That would really change your mind as to whether you want to do that.
That's exactly right. Now, you still have available the exclusion if you go through bankruptcy and the exclusion if you can prove insolvency.
Right.
And but like you say, those are, I mean, bankruptcy, obviously, no one wants to do, and that's a huge process. And insolvency requires a great deal of checking out your financial.
Well, that's affairs. Right, and there are many people who have had, you know, significant assets, but got in over their head on the mortgage, and the mortgage market crashed, and the only the elephant in the room was their house, and they needed to get out from under that, otherwise everything else was going to topple down. Well, you know, this is going to be an interesting thing.
Exactly, and if you can convert a retirement account into cash, they're going to count that against you in terms of checking insolvency. And so, if you happen to have, like, exactly the scenario you were saying, a decent retirement account, but your house was just didn't work out and you're having to give it back and you have cancellation of debt income, you're not going to be able to exclude the debt if you have that nice little nest egg.
Leaves you with some bad choices.
Exactly right. Exactly right. Another one that's going away, mortgage insurance premiums. That's one where if you have that FHA loan, you've been able to deduct those mortgage insurance premiums just like mortgage interest. But at the end of 2013, they're going to say, okay, we're not going to allow that anymore. And I think it was one of the provisions, just like the cancellation of debt, that was kind of added in to help the housing situation.
Well, that could be expensive too, because that mortgage insurance can be very substantial.
It's gone up in the last couple of years, so some people are paying very significant monthly mortgage insurance premiums. So if you can do a refi by the end of the year and still keep a similar interest rate, and you maybe with home values sneaking up a little, you've been able to get 80% equity, or you can do maybe an 80-10, or there's some other type loans out there that you could get out of that that's worth looking into. Another thing is, and I know some clients of mine have taken advantage of this, but when you're when you have a IRA distribution that you need to do, you can make that directly to a charity as opposed to pulling it out, having to recognize it in income and then take a charitable deduction. It is more advantageous to directly donate that distribution to the charity, and that is going away at the end of 2013.
So in 2014, if you want to give money from your IRA to charity, you have to take the money out and then send it to the charity and pay the tax on it and then send the net, whatever you got, to the charity instead of making it net to the charity directly, and you don't have to pay any tax.
That's right. That's right. A big one for our Washington residents. You used to, up through 2013, you have the option to elect to deduct state and local income taxes or to deduct your state sales tax. Now, if you solely work in Washington and you don't pay, like Oregon has, state income tax, you've probably always elected to deduct sales taxes, and they have a short method for you to calculate that, so you don't have to keep track of sales tax on all your purchases. well, at the end of 2013, that election is going away, and you won't be able to deduct your state sales tax. So that's pretty significant. If you're planning on buying a big ticket item, you may want to do it before the end of the year.
Gee, they're just the kinder and gentler IRS, eh?
Exactly. And I think the last one of significance, I won't go over all eight, but this last one, remodeling your home. A lot of people have taken advantage of the energy efficiency credits. Well, they're finally laying that one to rest. They had this crazy $500 lifetime limit, and this credit's been available since 2006. And, I mean, who's kept track of, you know, oh, I took a $300 credit in 07 and a $150 credit, and anyway, so on and so forth. Well, they're finally laying this one to rest. So if you're going to be putting in energy-efficient windows or making significant energy insulation type things to your home, do it before the end of the year if you haven't taken advantage of this credit. So,
okay. Well, we're going to take a quick break here, and we'll come back with Carl's comments and some questions that you want to ask yourself before you go to your estate planning attorney, which you're going to do before the end of the year. This is Investing Simplified. We'll be right back.
Hello, this is Kevin Stege, shareholder with Baker & Colson Certified Public Accountants, serving the Portland and Southwest Washington areas for almost 40 years. We are a full-service accounting and consulting firm offering our services to a wide range of business and individual clients. One of the largest expenses to a household or a business is its tax burden. While off-the-shelf tax products can help file simple returns, they can't know your plans for the future and not only provide insight and planning to help you get there, but actually help you along the way. There are just some things that can't be replaced by experience. Whether you are just beginning your working career or have a well-established business with many employees, rely on the professionals at Baker & Colson to help in an efficient, accurate, and personalized manner. We are located at 2414 Northeast Division in Gresham and can be reached at our website at bakercolson.com or 503-666-5569. That's bakercolson.com, 503-666-5569. And remember, at Baker & Colson, our service is the product our clients remember most.
What you don't know can hurt you. Get that investing question or that legal question or even a tax question answered now. Call the Knowledge Trust at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now here's Chuck, Carl, and Kevin, the Knowledge Trust.
If I had $1 million.
Well, welcome back to Investing Simplified. This is Carl Jepsen sitting in for Chuck Price. And Chuck's the guy who tells you how to get that $1 million. And we're, Kevin and I are the people who try to tell you how to legally and from a tax perspective protect it. So anyway, we're back and we're going to be talking about a couple of things in this part of the show. Again, our telephone number is 503-417-7626 if you want to join our conversation. We'd love to hear from you. And it is we are kind of an unusual show in the sense that we are local people here in the area, and we are broadcasting live, so you can call us. You don't have to worry that you're being channeled all over the world, and we are actually right here in the community with you. So anyway, the topic I was going to talk about for Carl's comments is some important questions to discuss with your estate planning lawyer, which, as we mentioned before, you want to go see him before the end of the year rather than wait for your New Year's resolution. And the reason I suggest this is that a lot of times I think people say, okay, I'm going to go do a will. And they have some kind of thoughts on what they want. But they don't think of some unanticipated kinds of questions. So the first question I like to have people ask themselves is, so who's going to take my dog? I mean, really, that's pretty important. I mean, you know, a lot of times people forget about that and they get into the office it's a pretty important thing. So and in Oregon, you can do a pet trust if you want to. A lot of times people give a specific gift to the personal representative or somebody and say, you know, I want my personal representative to take the dog. Or if they don't like the dog, then find the best home they can, and we're going to give so much money to the person whoever takes it to give it a good home. Or you can actually set up the trust, which is a little more formal than that. Next question, what happens if I become incapacitated? a lot of times people think, you know, well, estate planning is only for the time that I die. Well, that's not really true. It really is part and parcel of what happens while you're incapacitated and making plans for that. So that's something to think about. Here's one that nobody wants to think about. What happens if my spouse dies first? It's ironic, but most people think that they're going to die first. And then they think about it, and it might not happen. It might be that their spouse dies first, and that's an important, you know, question to ask yourself. The next one is even worse. What happens if one of my children or my children die first? That's one that really, really people just go, ooh, you know, they don't want to think about it. So the corollary question perhaps to that is, who's supposed to get my property if both my spouse and my children die first? I mean, a lot of times nobody thinks that far ahead, and unfortunately it does come up, and it gives some strange answers if they don't think about it.
And I've seen some situations where there's been simultaneous death. One was a house fire, and you know, of course, there's always the plane crash scenario, and unfortunately probably does need to be thought about and addressed.
It does. You know, the old car wreck leaving the lawyer's office is one of those things that you don't want to have. Now, that's one of the good things about our office. We're out on 122nd Avenue, so you don't have to drive downtown to deal with that. So you're somewhat less likely to have that event. But nonetheless, so then another question is, if I die first, do I want my spouse to be able to change her will? Well, most people think, well, I don't know. I never thought that way. But this is particularly important if you have a blended family where you had prior marriages and prior children. You know, the situation that can come up is that, you know, it seems like when the natural parent of the one side of the children dies, you know, they don't seem as attractive to the surviving parent of the other side. And so sometimes the percentage or the distribution can get changed. Question is, do you trust your spouse enough to think that they're going to continue doing what you all agreed on in the first place? Or do you want to, you know, somehow make that cast in stone? And sometimes that gives rise to, you know, some rather domestic intranquility. So you have to be very cautious about doing that, but it's an issue that you really need to think about. The other thing is, you know, are you concerned that your spouse would, you know, find Paul the pool boy or Candy the caregiver and basically disinherit your kids, or, you know, John the gigolo? You know, I mean, all those kinds of things can happen. And, you know, people laugh when I say that, but the fact of the matter is, it is not uncommon for, you know, little old guys or little old ladies to seek out the deep pocket when they see one. And, you know, they tell them that they're cute and they're happy and handsome and or whatever. And the next thing you know, the kids are getting nothing. So it's an important thing to consider.
That is one of the benefits of setting up having the trust scenario, to where when the first spouse passes and their property is separated, and if it goes into a trust, even after they're gone, the surviving spouse can't change.
Right. You can establish it in such a way that it becomes irrevocable, and at least the distribution provisions can be irrevocable, and still provide, you know, support and income and maintenance, and provide the benefit of the assets to the surviving spouse, but just not carte blanche control. So, the other question is how can I avoid family squabbling? Well, there's the easiest answer to that is don't make anybody mad. So before you take that approach to your estate planning that without knowing all of the facts might seem unfair or inequitable, you know, think real long and hard about that, because the people who are left behind are the ones who are going to have to live with that squabbling. You know, it's the deceased person, as far as I know, they don't get to see it. So it's a good thing to think ahead and try to avoid those squabbles. And one of the best ways to do that is to try to avoid making people mad, try to treat people fairly, and everybody has their own definition of fairness. So those are some questions you ought to consider. That will help your lawyer quite a bit, by the way, because I know that I ask these types of questions with people, and sometimes they look at me with this, oh, gosh, I never thought that could happen. But you're right, it could. And so Those are kinds of things. I used to be a little bit squeamish about asking it, but anymore, I mean, I think it's better to ask and let them think about it than not. So that's kind of Carl's comments anyway. And
what I think as you go into your estate planning and stuff, having a good perspective on your assets and your money can really help. You know, if you look at your assets and your money as a tool that's used in this life before you go on, an inheritance is certainly a blessing to those who receive it, but it can also be a curse too. And so just dying with the most assets that you can, or the biggest cash pile, is maybe not the best thing. Maybe while you're still alive, it's time to look at, maybe we're not talking about a gambling trip to Vegas, or extravagant trips, but, you know, I knew one particular situation of this person who was very well off. We're talking over $10 million. Her and her husband did very nicely. The husband had long since deceased, and all she had was one son who she called a ne'er-do-well, and she wasn't charitably inclined. She didn't want to give him money. I think she set aside maybe a couple thousand a month after she passed for his upkeep and maintenance and stuff. And other than that, it was just sitting there. And it's just it's a shame, I think, to let that tool not be used in a way that you see fit while you're living and can enjoy seeing it bless people. Or, you know, I'm not necessarily saying give it away charitably, but that is a consideration.
Well, there's certainly a tax advantage to giving it away charitably. And like you said, it's nice to do something good. I think that one of the things that I think people who work very, very hard and, you know, live frugally and take care of their money, you know, they think about it, but they really get invested in doing that well. And that's okay. That's great. But I think that at the end of the day, I mean, it's going to go somewhere when you die. So when it does, how's it going to be used? You know, what do you really want? What do you want people to remember about you? You know, do you want them to remember that you accumulated a lot of money? Well, even then, that's not going to make a lot of difference, because, you know, how many of us can compare with, you know, Bill Gates and Warren Buffett and people like that? So that isn't really, the thing. And most of us, the biggest impact that we make in our lives is the impact that we have on people and relationships. And money and property can be a tool for benefiting others and improving those relationships or giving benefit to others. So if you're so inclined, I think that that's a good idea. You can feel good, they can feel good, and you can spend less taxes. So that's it for this section. I think what we'll do is take another quick break, and then we'll come back and wrap up. And hopefully, if you have a question that's burning in your mind, give us a call. This is Investing Simplified, 503-417-7626.
The time to stop working is approaching, or maybe it's already arrived. CDs and money markets are paying only fractions of a point. How secure do you feel about retiring right now? Call Chuck Price. He's located right here in Portland, and he can show you how to increase your Social Security up to 67% using specific program rules and the file and suspend strategy. Chuck specializes in working with people who are either retired or are close to retiring, and he focuses on how to never run out of money during retirement. Do this today. Schedule a free 20-minute retirement plan phone consultation, or schedule an appointment with Chuck himself. Call 503-253-3000. That's 503-253-3000. Chuck Price at Price Financial Group Wealth Management. On the web at pfgwm.com. What you don't know can hurt you. Get that investing question or that legal question or even a tax question answered now. Call the Knowledge Trust at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now here's Chuck, Carl, and Kevin, the Knowledge Trust.
If I had $1 million.
If I had $1 million.
Well, welcome back to Investing Simplified. This is Carl Jepson fitting in for Chuck Price today, and Kevin Stege's here in the studio with me. We've been discussing just about a broad range of topics today. If you have a topic that you'd like to talk about that relates to estate planning or taxes or any legal matter for that matter, and or investing, if you want to test out the tax and estate planning guy, we'll be glad to talk to you about it. And again, we're at 503-417-7626. And one of the areas that we often touch on is you know, what to do and when you're planning your retirement and that sort of thing. And one of the things that often comes up is, when is it time to, you know, have a talk with mom or dad about, you know, their driving or about, you know, their living circumstance? And it's a real delicate thing because it can cause a lot of trouble. And some of us old folks get a little bit crotchety at that time, and we really don't want to hear it too much. So anyway, sounds like we have a caller, though, before I get to the crotchety guy. not the caller. And Larry, are you on board there?
Yes. Carl, just real quickly, back to your elderly abuse conversation to open the show. 34% is a financial abuse, which is the largest percentage. But within that, if I understand things correctly, the relatives are the ones doing the most of the abusing.
It's true, indeed, especially with financial abuse.
You might mention that to the troops out there.
You're absolutely right. Within that, most of those come from home settings or settings where they're non-community based, or they're community based home setting, not institutional settings. And more often than not, the financial abuse is done by a, you know, a roommate or an actual family member, a child, you know, or a grandchild or something like that, who's living in the home with them. You're absolutely right. And that's what makes it so difficult to, you know, to police, because the elderly person is less capable of confronting or is less suspicious of the family member, I think, sometimes. And it makes it very difficult, and it's tragic, because then if it does get brought to light, you know, it becomes real messy. It is really, really messy and unfortunate, and it's a lot of heartache. I don't know whether it's just a matter of opportunity or not, but it certainly is one of those things that is heart-wrenching when you see it, or it can make you infuriated, depending on your, well, or both, I guess. So, yeah, you're absolutely right.
Okay, but I thought we'd just mention that, since, you know, the relatives are the number one people you had going to check on them. But in some cases, you know, they're taking advantage of the situation.
Well, absolutely. Well, I was thinking in terms of
how to advise people on it, but somebody needs to know what's going on with the whole situation.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's I'm thinking more in terms of someone who's in some kind of facility or institution,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, family members or friends,
or whatever. Yeah.
But you're right. That's hard to police, that kind of thing. In that situation, I think maybe setting up a situation where there's real transparency in how they deal with money amongst all family members. But most people don't like to share that kind of stuff with everybody, so it's very delicate to try to do that. You know, we just try to do the best we can, and hopefully those who are tempted can you know, suck it up and do good and not bad.
Are you speaking from experience there, Larry? Or
no, okay. Just things I've read.
Uh huh. Okay.
No, I've not. No, our family situation is all good. So
excellent.
Good. That's one of the greatest. I tell my clients a lot of times that a harmonious family is probably the greatest blessing they can have in their estate planning range. So, thank you so much for your call, Larry.
You're certainly welcome.
You bet. So. We were going to talk about that person who's kind of, you know, vulnerable. And this is a hypothetical letter from, this is straight talk from your not as sharp as he used to be, but not ready for the nursing home parent. And dear children, and to whom it may concern, I know you worry about me, and I appreciate your concerns. When you were teenagers, we worried about you too, a lot. However, we allowed you the freedom to make some of your own mistakes. When I allowed you to drive the car by yourself, I was worried sick. So what's the big deal if you think I drive too slow now? The point is that you can't protect me from all harm now any more than we could when you were a teenager. So here's what I need from you. Allow me to keep or lose my dignity as I choose. I want to stay in my home until I choose to go or an event makes it impossible for me to stay. Falling down at home is no more risky than your driving it at 16. Leave my car alone until I can't find my way home or crash it. I'm insured. Don't fuss over all my food selection. It's too late for me to eat healthy. If I want to smoke an occasional cigar or have a shot of whiskey, let me. In fact, join me. It'll probably do us both good. Just because I have lived alone doesn't mean I'm lonely. What makes you think I want to sit around with playing bingo? 7. Don't sneak up on me with any plans you have for me. Include me in the planning process. Don't assume I don't understand. Don't talk to me like I'm a child. Old people have earned the right to be childish, but they're not children. Allow me the respect, freedom, and dignity of embracing my old age to its conclusion. P.S. I'll be watching you. I just think that that's a useful answer. Maybe it's not everybody's answer, but nonetheless, it's one of those things that I think characterizes the way a lot of people feel. So you can take its message seriously or not, as the case may be. So anyway, Kevin, do you have any closing thoughts for the day?
I think we covered them. We've got some exciting stuff that we didn't talk about today on the Tax Investigator, and we'll save those for another show. Definitely some very specific tax planning things that you can do at the end of every single year, and we'll address that here. And you can reach me if you need to at BakerColson.com, 503-666-5569.
And I can be reached at 503-255-8795 and WarrenAllen.com on the web. Have a wonderful weekend, and thank you again, Vets, for all of your sacrifices for us and Vets' families. This is Investing Simplified.
Bryce Financial Group, wealth management.
Let's face it.